Jerry.
Debbie,
Hi, how are you? How are things?
Not too bad.
Good to see you. Good to meet you
not
finally.
Bad,
in 2016, I visited the home of artist Jerry Hunt to talk about his book, Blood Upon the Rose. Blood Upon the Rose is a graphic novel about the 1916 Rising. This programme is the final in our series, Schools Rising. Jerry also visited St. Aidan's CBS School in Whitehall, who read Blood Upon the Rose and produced their own work inspired by the graphic novel.
When did you start, actually? Were you always drawing when you were younger then? Or when did you start drawing?
I was actually drawing before I started reading comics, because I remember if my mother was alive, she'd soon tell you. We lived in a small labourer's cottage out about a half a mile from the village, which was close by. And it was all, the walls were all plastered. And I used to have bits of chalk, and I used to pester my mother because I'd be drawing on the walls and she'd have to come along with a bucket and a mop and wash them down. I used to draw on the concrete floor. I used to draw everywhere. I cannot remember when I started drawing. I must have been drawing as soon as I could walk, nearly.
Right, yeah.
And what I did draw then when I started getting the comics, I found that I could draw some of the characters in the comics, people like Dick Tracy and those, and the drawings in those comics was very simple because they had to come out every week and the artists had to think up a story, draw them and that. So I found that I could do those, and as I got older then, I kept, I suppose, improving, if you like.
The 1930s was a golden age for comics and heralded the emergence of popular characters such as Superman and Batman that are still with us today. By the 1950s, though, there was a backlash against comics, and they were perceived by many as immoral. There was a groundswell of opinion that they had a negative effect on childhood, as this 1950s archive clip demonstrates.
When I was a boy and played with the gang, we did a lot of things. We roasted potatoes and went on expeditions. We tipped over garbage cans now and then. We wrote nasty remarks about the teacher on the sidewalk. But we never spent an afternoon sitting around like this, reading. What a wonderful thing this would be if they were reading something worthwhile, something that would stimulate their desires to build and to grow. But they're not reading anything constructive. They're reading stories devoted to adultery, to sexual perversion, to horror, to the most despicable of crimes. Corpse that came to dinner. One of the wonderfully appealing things about children is that they haven't yet come to the age where reality and unreality are divorced. The emotional impact of something they read in a comic book may be much the same as a real-life situation they witness.
This clip from the popular US TV show Confidential File seems overly dramatic and dated now, but in many ways echoes contemporary society's concerns around the negative effect of computer gaming on children today. But the popularity of comics increased unabated, with the establishment of Marvel and the emergence of graphic novel artists such as Stan Lee. Today, graphic novels are more popular than ever and inspire film and TV adaptations such as The Walking Dead and the movie 300, amongst others. Graphic novels can be fiction, non-fiction, history, fantasy, or anything in between. Graphic novels are similar to comic books because they use sequential art to tell a story. Unlike comic books, graphic novels are generally standalone stories with more complex plots. Graphic novels can become powerful teaching tools in the classroom, and they can help develop students' ability to summarise and tell a story sequentially. They can also be a powerful teaching support to explore social and historical events and issues. They can inspire cross-curriculum collaborations between English, history and art departments.
Do you think graphic novels are a good way for teachers to kind of teach around history?
They are, and they're becoming more and more so. And an awful lot of people are copping on to this. You get situations now where journalists go out, and I'm not just talking about Ireland, I'm talking about worldwide. I could give you examples of journalists going out and seeing things happening. If you take, where was it, Rwanda, with the Hutu and the Tutsis, there was awful carnage there. There was a French journalist And he was there and he saw it. And he decided to write his version of what he saw. But he didn't do it in writing. He did it in, he could draw. So it all came out as a graphic novel. There was the famous one of this lad. He was a Jew and his parents were in Auschwitz, yes, yeah. And they had an awful time from the Nazis during the World War II, and eventually they got away and they got to America. But this lad grew up every night listening to their screams where they were reliving those awful nightmares, and he took it so bad that he became a drug addict. And when he got out of rehabilitation, he was still only about 18 or 19, he met a friend of his who says to him, look, you've got to get this off your chest. Write about it. Write a story about it. And let other people hear it. So he said he would. And he wasn't a great artist. But again, instead of writing a book, he did a graphic novel. And it's called Mouse. And he portrayed the Nazis as cats with human figures and the Jews as mice with human figures. And that won the Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah, and it's also because I suppose the younger generation now would tend to be more visual as well. So they're always on YouTube and videos. That's and right. Everything is visual. So I could see it could be really useful, particularly in teaching teenage boys as well, who are kind of difficult to get to read at a certain age. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I do, of course. I do, of course, because it's amazing. Donegal, the schools in Donegal, they took Blood Upon the Rose. They've a great idea now. They take a book every year and they buy so many copies and they pass them round to the various schools. They get their students to give their views on the book. Now, last year, they took Blood Upon the Rose and I went up to see what they did. They had a get-together then where all the schools came in and they got up on the stage one by one. And it was amazing the reaction they had. And they told us, each student gave his views on it. And it certainly, what came home to me was that to them, it was something completely different from just reading a book. In fact, one school actually did a play.
Okay.
Based on the graphic novel of Blood Upon the Rose. And they were so interested, like I says to myself, well, yes, this is obviously a good way of learning history.
As part of this programme, Jerry visited St Aidan's CBS School in Whitehall, North Dublin. There the students met with him and shared their work with him, work inspired and guided by their reading of Blood Upon the Rose.
Now, this is a totally different approach on colour. Lovely.
Okay, just tell us a little bit about your picture, if you could.
When I was reading the graphic novel, I was just saying the massacre of North King Street. I just thought that was really interesting.
Yes, indeed. That is something that really stuck out, and that really tells the story there. Surrender, you pest, shinners. Yeah, the shinners was a very common description of Sinn Féin by all the English people and that sort of thing. And that takes a terrific, and on the horse and the guy in full uniform and these people, I love the expression on her face where she knows what's going to happen to this guy. And it's terrific. What did she please? I beg you, leave us be. That's it, that describes it down to the ground. And I love the background. I love the background there.
The red background.
It's very good.
Yeah, really excellent. Really good.
Excellent.
Thanks so much.
I'm really enjoying this because you're doing great, lads.
We've heard a lot of things over this series from different elements of 1916. But one that's relatively new to me is the massacre of North King Street. And that's in your book. Maybe tell us a little bit about that, would you?
In North King Street, what happened was the British were being driven back again by snipers. And they just got so annoyed and so enraged with the whole thing that they weren't really wiping out these volunteers, that they actually started breaking down doors of houses, going into the houses. And if there was a man in the house, it didn't matter. And an awful lot of these men weren't involved at all. But the British captain would say, he's a member, he's involved. The wife would say, no, he's not. Bring him out. They'd bring him out into the garden and shoot him. And that went on all up around North King Street. And it was one of the savage parts of the war.
Yeah.
Which you get in wars, you know, but that really was bad.
Ciarán McGannam.
Okay, and if you just describe your picture a little bit for us.
I based it off a frame that was in the graphic novel. It was when the rebels were looking for a safe house and they shot off a lock of a door.
That's
and
right.
They accidentally killed a child who was actually hiding behind the door.
That's right.
And in my picture, I exaggerated the blood of the child like a lot.
Yes, yes.
I was just thinking like, you know, because like he's so young, like it's a bigger loss. So,
yes,
like,
of course. That was a terrible thing. But unfortunately, these things happen in war. And I remember when I did that, I don't think I drew actually what you've drawn there. I don't think I just probably maybe just referred to it. But I don't remember drawing anybody shooting the lock in the door and killing the child. But I think I may have referred to it. I certainly remember it all right. And that's excellent. It just tells it straight off, you know.
Why did you pick that particular scene, do you think? Did it really affect you that when you read it?
Yeah, like I'm not like as interested in like bigger history. I'm more interested in smaller stories. And I think that was, you know, one of the more interesting and affecting the stories.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, yes. I can take your point very much, because when I was actually doing the research and reading up on the thing, I found a lot of bits and pieces that I knew nothing about, like that, like Joe Plunkett's wedding, you know, bits and pieces like that that really stand out in your mind that you never heard of. And that's terrific. I like that.
Did you always have the idea that you were going to do something about 1916?
It was very, very funny. My father fought in 1916, and he also fought in the War of Independence. He wouldn't fight in the Civil War, he went to America instead. But I was talking to Brenby after doing Streets of Dublin, and I says, I tell you something now, let's get away from the fiction and let's do something historical. And he says, what were you thinking of? I says, I was thinking of doing the 1913 lockout. Well, let's see, if you're going to go like that, says he, why don't you go the whole hog and do 1916? And I says, right, we'll do 1916. So then he rang me up in haste one day, and he used to check by email for me, because I never did. I had a website which he organised for me, and I'm no good at that sort of thing. And he says, did you check your website? I says, no. Says, see, there's an email from O'Brien Press. They want to talk to you. Oh, says I, fair enough. So I got on to them. So himself and myself went along to meet them, and they asked me what we were thinking of doing. And I says, well, we were thinking of doing 1916. And Michael O'Brien, he had a couple of his directors with him. So there was a laugh around the table. And I says, you know, what's the joke? When he says, that's exactly, says he, what we want you to do.
Right, yeah.
So that's how we got to do 1916. The only difference was that now that I was with a publisher and doing historical stuff, I had to write a story. Now, I never used to write stories for my own comics.
Okay.
I'd get an idea, I'd sit down at my drawing board, and I'd develop the idea, and I'd keep developing it as I went along. And halfway through, I wouldn't have a clue how it was going to finish. And when I get fed up drawing it, I'd finish it. But now with O'Brien Press, I had to write a complete story, do research, write a story. They would check it, make a few comments on this, that and the other. And eventually we'd get down to doing the illustration.
Yeah, how come there was so much narration in it?
How come?
There was so much narration.
How come there was so much narration in it?
In it? Well, I just was telling a story, I suppose. And don't forget, I suppose when you think of it, when it comes to drawing graphic novels, I've never had any intuition or anything like that. I've just had to make it up myself as I went along. And maybe I might have put too much narration, maybe I didn't put enough, I don't know. I just did what I thought. And most people have accepted it as being what they think is right. But I like to hear you ask questions like that, because it shows people what their reaction is to it. Would you have put less narration?
Yeah, I think I would have put less narration and more dialogue. Because I think it was on page 33 that there was only narration and not a single piece of dialogue was spoken.
All right, yeah. Well, I suppose when you think of it, you see, you've got to remember that a publisher like O'Brien Press, they don't rely on just selling in Ireland. they try to sell in America and all over the world, and an awful lot of people wouldn't know as much as you or I would about 1916. So I felt I had to give them a lot of the story of what went on, and that was it. My father, funny enough, he never spoke about 1916 or the War of Independence. All he would say was, look, something had to be done and someone had to do it. And in fact, my sister, who has been in league with a bunch of relatives of all the people who fought then, she says that some of them says that they actually decided among themselves that they wouldn't talk about it.
Okay, so you didn't hear any stories from your dad over the years? You don't know what his role was?
All my dad would say was that he fought under Dev in Boland's Mills, and that they didn't really see an awful lot of action. They used to go out on sorties, all right, groups of them from Boland's Mills, but he didn't. But he admired Dev, and he saw a lot more action in the War of Independence, where he was part of a squad that used to go around, especially around Capel Street. And they would, from rooftops, they would snipe at the British and that sort of thing. But he never really, my mother spoke a lot more about it than he did. He very seldom said anything about it. Anyway, the point is, my father died when I was 10 years old.
Oh, okay.
So he probably thought I was too young anyway to be talking about that sort of thing.
I'm here with Alex, one of the students from St. Aidan's CBS, and we were just talking to Gerry Hunt in the workshop there. Alex, you were telling me a little bit about your own family history from 1916.
Yeah, my mum and dad just went down the family tree not so long ago, and it turned out they found out that my great-great-grandfather was Mick Slater, and he fought in Jacob's factory under Thomas McDonagh when they all had to surrender in Jacob's factory. Thomas McDonagh told Mick Slater personally to not surrender but to escape because he had his wife was pregnant, who turned out to be my great-great-grandmother, and also her brother was Paddy Carney, who wrote the national anthem.
Okay, that's some history there in your family. Did it make you more interested in 1916 when you found this out?
Well, definitely, yeah. When I found this all out, I just had kind of more interest just burst, really. I just wanted to figure out more, see if there were maybe any other descendants, maybe.
Alex Hogan.
Okay, and if you just really, really colourful, kind of almost like a vintage
terrific
style sort of about it or something.
Terrific.
Could you just describe, it says it's a picture of somebody draped in the tricolour, far beneath it, the Union Jack behind it, and it says, "Stand with us."
I just probably went for a propaganda type of approach, just for trying to encourage the Irish people just to stand up for themselves against the British.
Okay, and that's exactly what it looks like.
That's exactly what it tells us. I tell you. That could be actually used as a recruiting poster, and that's exactly what it is. It's terrific.
Did you get your influence from those old posters, like "We Want You," that kind of thing?
And then when I kind of did it in the graphic style of the hard shadows from the Blunderbuss, so I just kind of mixed and matched and came with my own piece.
Is that pastel? Is that or oil pastel?
This on top here is that a person's face?
It's the back of someone's head.
Yeah. It's excellent. It's excellent. I love it.
Jay Kennedy.
Okay. And just maybe describe your work here a little bit.
Is this? I've got it right side up now. Have I? Yeah, lovely.
I done it in it's the back alleys of Dublin.
Sure.
During the 1916, of course, and it takes place when some of the rebels were breaking into some of the houses to get away from the British.
Yes, indeed. And that gives it fantastic. It really does, because there's a great movement there. They're just going in the windows and there's this, and it's excellent. And when I was a bit older than you, when I was going dancing, I used to go to about 3 dances a week. I had no car, no bicycle. And I walked home through every side street in Dublin. I know the side streets in Dublin better than I know the main streets. And this brings it all back to me. Very good. Lovely.
Keane Newman.
Okay, Keane, this is a great
Well, I don't have to ask you any questions about this. This is the GPO.
Yeah.
Excellent. And it's at a time as well. I'd say that's about the time when Pearse and Connolly and those decided to leave the GPO, and they ran down Moore Street because, as you can see, the whole place is in flames. The big guns came out. They had one up at Trinity College, a big field gun, and they were bombing I won't say what I was going to say, but they were bombing the Blitz out of this Dublin city centre. But that's lovely. I love that.
And he's done it from the perspective of somebody shooting a gun towards...
Of course, I can see it here.
Towards
I
the GPO
see it here.
As
you
well.
Can actually see the bullet. Is that a bullet, is it? Yeah. Lovely.
And it's kind of... it's almost like, I hate to say it, were you influenced by any computer games? And that is almost a little bit of a Call of Duty look about that.
I just remember whenever I pass the GPO, I always see the bullet holes in the...
Of course, yes indeed. So. No, couldn't be better.
So how does the process work then? Do you draw in ink, is it?
I draw in ink and I write the story. I draw in ink and then I get someone, or they get someone to colour it. Bren B coloured the first one for us. He coloured Blood Upon the Rose. But the other ones then... we got Alan Nolan to do one, 1913 Lockout. And the last two, there's a fellow called Matt Griffin. He's from Clare and he's excellent. And he has done the two for us. And that's the way it stands at the moment. Everybody has some sort of talent. Some people sing, some people play football, some people run. I was into art. I was into art since I was about 4 years of age. And... I was always at it. Now, the unfortunate thing for me was, as I've just told you, lads, I never had an art class. That's the way it went, that any school I went to, I was in school, I am a dub, but I was reared in Sligo, in a village down in Sligo, and they had no art class. I went to secondary school, no art class. I went up to Bolton Street to study architecture, and all we had was an hour every week where we just drew statues and stuff like that. You couldn't call it art. But I did my own stuff because I really liked it.
I know some people, you were saying you have an interest in graphic novels as well. Is there any other period in history, Irish or international, that you think would make a good graphic novel? Did any of that arise to you when you were...
I'd say it'd be like really interesting if you could do like a Troubles in the North type of thing, where like you could have a protagonist on either side kind of conflicted between the two kind of underlying groups of Protestants and Catholics. I'd say if you could implement that with like a more kind of well-known terrorist attack during that time, it could make for an interesting, well-paced comic book. So.
Okay, absolutely. And you have done a graphic novel around...
Well, the last graphic novel I've done... Yeah. Have you heard of Bobby Sands?
Yeah.
You would have heard of him. He died on hunger strike up in the north. Well, that was the last one I did. They wanted me to do Sinn Féin, but no, I had no interest in doing Sinn Féin because it's been going on for 100 years and it's still going on and we don't know what's going to happen. But I always wanted to do Bobby Sands. And when I did Bobby Sands and it got up on sale in the north of Ireland, obviously the unionists were... in dire straits over it, and they have a tendency to tell you to get personal and sort of insulting as they do up at their meetings up in the north. And the first thing that a fellow called Jim Allister said was that the art was pathetic. That's how he started off, but they described it as being very inaccurate, very untrue, that Bobby Sands was a terrorist, that he was not a hero like I made him out to be. But that didn't worry me. What worried
me was... And so this is we're coming to the end of the centenary year this year. And I suppose for people my age and younger, it's brought up stuff we didn't really know about what happened in 1916, or it was really just a passage in a book of history when I was in school. There wasn't much written about it. But I mean, did you have a sense of it? And I know earlier you were talking about that you knew Luke Kelly on the folk scene as well. Was that kind of, within that environment and that group, were you aware of that kind of Republican, I suppose, history of Ireland?
I've always been aware of a Republican history of Ireland. And I've kept up to date with a lot of what went on. In fact, the last novel I've done, which has caused a right furore in the north of Ireland, was Bobby Sands. And as I say, you get to know people, and I suppose through the folk singing as well. I used to go up to Belfast and the north of Ireland, and I met an awful lot of lads who would have known an awful lot more than I would about conditions in the north compared with conditions here in the south. Now, I would imagine that probably what a lot of the people in the north were suffering back in the 60s and 70s, I say we, our forefathers were suffering the same at the hands of the British back in 1913, 1916 and so on. Things were really bad, and I was always, a lot of my friends were sort of Republican as well. And while we weren't actively involved or anything like that, we used to keep a lot of interest alive by reading and talking to people and that. The gas thing about it is, I don't know if I was telling you about it or not, Debbie, but an Italian publisher got it into his hands. He did a deal with my publisher about 6 months ago, which gave him, he bought the rights to publish it himself in Italy, and it has now come out in Italian. I didn't bring a copy with me here, but it's nice to see it in Italian. I can't read a word of Italian, but it's amazing what graphic novels do, how the pictures catch people's eyes. And as you were saying here, I've been around on various schools around the country, up in Donegal and that, and all the students like yourselves says that compared with reading a history book, where it can become a bit boring after a while and more like doing work, that when you're reading a graphic novel, it's like reading something that, a cowboy thing or anything, except that it's telling you a story that relates to Ireland, and that's true. And that's what we're banking on. And I suppose that's why O'Brien Press got the idea in the first place.
You've all had experience of drawing through the graphic novel style. How did you find it? Did you enjoy it? And what do you think about using graphic novels to learn about history?
I think that having the visual aid, I think, did give me a better image and like kind of story in my head of what went on. I think, you know, like as I said before, like I'm a bit less interested in the, you know, broader history. Like I'm more interested in specific individual stories. But I think like if you use more visual aid with like, say, the history books, mm-hmm. books that like the big publishers print, mm-hmm. I think that would probably help a lot of people learn, you know, because like people, like lots of people are visual learners rather than just like reading text. So I think that it has kind of helped me get a better idea of like what went on during the rising.
That was the final programme in our series Schools Rising. The students' artwork discussed as part of this programme will be available to view on the podcast page for this episode on the Near FM website. Thanks to Gerry Hunt for taking part in the programme, and also to teacher Deirdre McQuaid and the students of St Aidan's CBS Whitehall.
This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.